He didn't really know when Dietrich had bought the wire, nor when the travelers had determined to try for home. And how did Ockham fit in? The Pope had invited him to Avignon on 8 June 1349, but there was evidence he had left Munich earlier, just ahead of the plague outbreak there. Nothing further was ever heard of him, and historians supposed he had died of the plague along the way. His route would have taken him near Oberhochwald. Would he have stopped there to see my friend the Doctor Seclusus? Had he brought the plague with him from Munich? Had he died there? Ah, Tom chewed the tip of his light pen. He envied physicists. The answers were always in the back of the book. If the physicist were only persistent enough or clever enough, she could pry them loose from the universe. Cryologists were less fortunate. The facts themselves did not always survive, and those that did survived by luck, not importance. No amount of persistence could interpret a record that had perished in a long-ago fire. If you couldn't live with that, with the knowledge that the answers were not in the back of the book, best stay out of history altogether. He studied his list and diagrams carefully, referring to the original documents from time to time to refresh his mind on the details. On a map, he checked the flight of the Feldberg demon from St. Blasien in the direction of the Feldberg. Oberhochwald lay in its path. In the end, he saw no other possible explanation. In fact, he wondered now why he hadn't seen it earlier. What had he told Sharon that day in the restaurant? Maybe the subconscious is smarter than we think. Or maybe not. He leaned back in his chair and stared at the ceiling, pulling his lip. He couldn't see any obvious flaws in his reasoning, but what did that mean? Sometimes the obvious is only wishful thinking. He needed a second opinion, someone on whose judgment and discretion he could rely. He copied his files and added a summary. When he looked at the old digital wall clock with its liquid crystal display, it was 0320 hours. That meant 920 hours in Freiburg. He took a deep breath, hesitated, then before he could have second thoughts, he downloaded all of it to my office, a quarter of the world away. It contained a single question. Was gloves do? What's your guess? Tom's message piqued my curiosity. I emailed that a reply would require several days' research, at least, and strolled off to the library at the Albert Louis. There I found some of the documents he had asked about and compared them to others he had sent. Then I searched out further documents and blew off the centuries and read them as well. Afterward, in solitude, I smoked my heavy, carved Schwarzwalder pipe, and in the tobacco smoke I pondered. Dignity we save for our old age, and what I had of it I had earned. Yet Tom was hardly the sort of man to leap to conclusions or to play a prank on a friend. But a friend is a friend, and you may have noticed that he and I were Dutzende. We used do with each other, and that is no light thing. So 2 days later, I scanned the documents I had found and compressed them and did all that wonderful stuff that modern technology allows. Then I attached them to an email. Cautiously, very cautiously, I outlined my conclusions. If Tom had the brains that God had given turnips, he could read between the lines as easily as on them. That is what intelligence means, interlegere. What are you doing up so early? Tom started violently. His chair nearly rolled out from under him. He caught himself on the edge of his desk and, when he looked around, saw Sharon standing in the bedroom doorway, rubbing her eyes. Don't sneak up on me that way. Why? How should I sneak up on you? Besides, a Mack truck could sneak up on you. You were so intent on that printer. She yawned. Oh, that's what woke me up. The printer. She padded in her bare feet into the kitchen and turned on the tea kettle. Time to get up anyway, she called back over her shoulder. What are you up to at this hour? Tom pulled the last sheet from the printer and scanned it quickly. He had been reading my message as it emerged. I'm linked with Anton. We've been IMing for the past hour. Anton Zengler? How is the old dear? He's fine. He wants me to come to Freiburg. Tom flipped through the stack of printouts, riffling them with his thumb. This is the bait to lure me there. She poked her head around the kitchen archway. Freiburg? Why? I think he thinks what I think. Oh, well, I'm glad you cleared that up. It would take too long, he said, and sound absurd. That hasn't stopped you before? She wiped her hands on a dish towel and crossed the room where she stood behind him, leaning with both her hands on his shoulders. Tom, I'm a physicist, remember? Next to strange, charming quarks. Nothing sounds ridiculous. Tom pulled on his lower lip. After a moment, he tossed the printouts into his desk basket. Sharon, why would a medieval backwoods priest need 200 feet of copper wire? Why? I don't know. Neither do I. But he ordered it specially made. He leaned forward and pulled a sheet from the stack. It was underlined heavily in red. And during the summer of 1349, monks in a monastery near Oberhochwald heard thunder when there were no clouds in the sky. He put the sheet down. And Peccatores Eiffelheimensis, the sins of the Eiffelheimers, something Anton found. It denounces the heretical notion that there could be men with souls who were not descended from Adam. Sharon shook her head. I'm still asleep. I don't get it. Tom was surprised to discover how reluctant he was to say his thoughts aloud. All right, he said. About 700 years ago, sentient beings from another world were stranded near Oberhochwald in the Black Forest. There, he'd said it. He held up a hand to forestall Sharon, whose mouth had dropped open. Their vessel malfunctioned. I think it traveled through Negi hyperspace. They weren't killed, but it was enough to start a forest fire and injure some of them. Sharon had found her voice. Wait a minute. Wait a minute. What proof? Let me finish, please. Tom gathered his thoughts and continued. The aliens' sudden appearance out of nowhere, and their physical features, yellow bulging eyes, for example, frightened many of the villagers who fled, spreading rumors of demons to the nearby towns. Others, including the village priest, Pastor Dietrich, saw that the aliens were creatures in need of help, and just to be safe, he obtained a carefully worded ruling from his bishop, something he could do in Latin without giving the show away. The aliens lived in Oberhochwald for many months. While Fra Joachim and the others were accusing them of sorcery and demon worship, the villagers tried to help the aliens repair their damaged vessel. I should have seen that in the business with the copper wire. What possible use would that have been to earthly travelers? They also flew. Were they winged creatures? Did they have anti-gravity? Perhaps they had a way to harness that vacuum energy you talk about. In his letter, Pastor Dietrich carefully denied only that his guests flew by supernatural means. He had run out of breath. He studied Sharon's face for a hint of her reaction. Go on, she said. The aliens were immune to the plague, different biochemistry, and repaid the villagers' kindness by caring for them. At least some did. Others, I'm sure, had succumbed to apathy by then. Dietrich even converted a few. We have a record of at least one baptism. Johannes Stern? Oh, he knew where his guests came from. He knew. The aliens, too, began to die. Not from plague, but from the lack of some vital nutrient. That different biochemistry again. They eat. But take no nourishment, was how Dietrich put it. When his friend Hans died, this is a guess. Now, when Hans finally died, Dietrich buried him in the churchyard and had a carving of his face put on the stone so that future generations would know. Only he didn't realize how many generations that would be, or that the village itself would vanish. The taboo? Easy. There really were demons there. And shortly after Joachim cursed the place, it was struck by plague, impressive enough for superstitious peasants. Were the demons really dead or just sleeping, waiting for new victims? People shunned the place and passed the proscription on to their children. If you don't obey Mama, the flying devils will come and take you away. Shortly, Joachim's tag of Teufelheim was euphemized to Eiffelheim, and the original name of Oberhochwald was gradually forgotten. All that was left? Was a custom of avoiding the location, vague folk tales of flying monsters, and a gravestone with a face on it. There it was, all out in the open now. A lot of it was surmise, inference. He had no primary sources on Brother Joachim, for example. But I had found him a memoir by an abbot at the Strasbourg Friary, which quotes Joachim as saying, "The great failure at Oberhochwald brought the most terrible curses on their heads, about which I had warned them repeatedly